It is Monday, July 13th. The news cycle didn't slow down just because the weekend ended, so here is the wrap on what you missed today. The Senate is currently navigating a period of uncertainty. Reports have circulated regarding the health of Senator Lindsey Graham, though official statements from his office have not confirmed his death. We are tracking this closely as information becomes available. The legislative agenda remains stalled. The Senate is currently deadlocked on the Save America Act. This bill was a primary focus for the Republican caucus, and its progress has slowed significantly in the absence of key leadership. The party is currently working to manage internal consensus during a 7-week sprint to the midterms. The tech world is also seeing significant legal activity. Apple has initiated a lawsuit against OpenAI. The filing alleges that OpenAI engaged in a campaign to recruit former Apple employees and obtain trade secrets related to hardware design. Apple is seeking an injunction to stop the alleged practices and is pursuing damages for the loss of proprietary information. It is a hell of a thing to watch a company like Apple, which has spent decades building its own walled garden, accuse someone else of trying to build a faster, cheaper one by raiding the garden next door. Legal battles over IP have always been part of the tech playbook, but this feels different. The race isn't just about software anymore. It is about who owns the physical chips and the actual machines that run this stuff. If Apple is right, OpenAI basically decided that paying legal fees was just another line item in their operating budget, cheaper than doing the actual, slow work of inventing things themselves. Meanwhile, the strategy for building these models is shifting. We are seeing a move away from the massive, dense models that defined the last few years. Companies like Cosine AI are arguing that you do not need billions of dollars or insane amounts of compute to stay at the frontier. They are pushing for smaller, inference-efficient models that prioritize active parameters over total size. The goal is to make these systems deployable on manageable hardware, rather than relying on massive, power-hungry clusters that only a few hyperscalers can afford. This is where the supply chain starts to matter more than the code. The United States is changing its export strategy to treat infrastructure as a sphere of influence. They are granting the United Arab Emirates, the UAE, license-free access to advanced chips. This puts the Gulf in a position to become a global hub for AI inference. It is a calculated move to secure U.S. influence in a distributed network, but it also creates a massive headache for anyone trying to track where this technology is actually going. The hardware build-out is not peaking, either. Capital spending by companies like Meta Platforms is accelerating. This is creating a multi-year runway for companies that handle the boring physical reality of the shift. Firms like Celestica, which builds proprietary AI server racks, and Comfort Systems USA, which manages the electrical and cooling needs for these massive data centers, are becoming essential nodes in the economy. They are the new gatekeepers. You can have the smartest model in the world, but if you cannot keep the servers from melting, it does not matter. Everything is becoming more integrated and, frankly, more fragile. We are seeing tools like Marimo Pair, which lets coding agents interact with a live Python kernel rather than just static files. It is a technical shift, sure, but it signals a move toward robust engineering processes. We are finally moving past the era of so-called vibe coding and into something that looks like actual, verifiable work. There is a recurring theme here, and it is a little cynical. The market is currently in a subsidy era where labs like OpenAI and Anthropic are aggressively underpricing their tokens to grab as much territory as possible. It is great for us, the users, but it is not sustainable. Eventually, the bill comes due. The real winners in this transition are not going to be the ones with the most hype or the biggest models. They are going to be the ones who own the stack, from the chips in the rack to the data loops that keep the system running. We are watching a shift from a race for sheer scale to a race for operational control. It is less about who has the biggest model and more about who has the most efficient one. The companies that can prove they can do more with less, and that can protect their IP while doing it, are the ones that will actually be standing when the music stops. Everyone else is just burning cash, hoping that if they run fast enough, nobody will notice the foundation they are building on is made of sand. Moving to travel, the Australian government is replacing paper arrival cards with a digital declaration system. The move is designed to modernize infrastructure and give border agencies access to real-time data for managing biosecurity threats. But the shift effectively offloads the burden of compliance onto the traveler and presumes everyone has the reliable internet access and technical skill to handle a digital interface. It is a classic case of trading public accessibility for administrative velocity, which, honestly, is the theme of the week. Look at the sales world. Businesses are losing revenue because they prioritize administrative convenience over a smooth buyer journey. They demand clunky invoicing, redundant scheduling, and long contracts. It creates a negative feedback loop where high administrative drag signals incompetence before a transaction even finishes. The fix is empirical testing. Operators need to physically purchase their own products, count every click, and purge the friction. If a process takes more than 3 minutes, you are essentially paying for your own decline. There is a similar push for efficiency in horse racing. At Monmouth Park, leadership is moving away from a reliance on traditional wagering. They are adding sports betting, residential development, and youth sports complexes to stabilize revenue. The goal is to create a diversified destination model that funds higher purses. This attracts top-tier fields, which keeps the track viable in a crowded entertainment market. It is a necessary evolution. Relying on the old format is not enough when the market is this volatile. In California, the racing industry is seeing a shift toward a multi-regional operational model. Top-tier trainers are moving away from static, single-location barn operations to maximize the utility of their horses. They are also getting more disciplined with asset management. Partnerships are moving away from speculative bets to data-driven decisions, like moving turf-proven horses to dirt surfaces to increase their long-term breeding value. They are managing the life cycle of the animal, not just the race day win. Closely related to this drive for efficiency is the rise of AI loop engineering in the startup world. This is about replacing manual, one-off tasks with autonomous, iterative cycles. An AI agent is connected to live data, performs a task, verifies the result against a key performance indicator, and logs the outcome in a memory file. It learns from past experiments and compounds gains over time. It is a way to achieve asymmetric labor returns. You replace the high cost of human agencies with low-cost token consumption. It allows for a volume of experimentation, like testing 1,000 ad hooks. That would be way too expensive for a human team to manage. However, there is a weird, dark side to this obsession with optimization. Look at the auction of a T-Rex fossil named Gus at Sotheby's. Bidding is expected to top $40 million. This price point effectively locks public museums and research institutions out of the market. When you combine this with the $64 million sale of a Stegosaurus named Apex earlier this year, a pattern emerges. Significant natural history artifacts are becoming private property. It is a strange irony. We are building these hyper-efficient systems to capture data and streamline commerce, but we are simultaneously hollowing out public access to history. Whether it is a digital border card or the commodification of dinosaur bones, the trend is clear. We are prioritizing speed and market value over everything else. Efficiency is great when it stops you from losing customers to a three-page payment form. It is less great when it turns the history of life on Earth into a trophy for a private collection. We are becoming very good at optimizing the how of our systems, but we are increasingly quiet about the why. If your only goal is to maximize velocity, you will eventually reach a point where you are moving very fast in a direction that nobody actually wants to go. In the world of professional sports, the tournament is down to the final four. Fantasy managers are now shifting from broad squad management to a hyper-focused strategy for the semifinals and the third-place playoff. The strategic landscape has hit three clear inflection points. First, the pool of available players has shrunk, leading to nearly identical rosters across the board. Managers are now forced to sacrifice defensive depth to afford premium assets like Harry Kane, pronounced Kane, or Ousmane Dembele, pronounced Oozman Dembele. Second, the third-place match introduces a specific rotation risk. Teams in this match often rotate their personnel, making it difficult to predict starting lineups. The logical hedge is to prioritize players from teams reaching the final, where lineups are more stable. Third, the scoring mechanics favor elite attackers who take penalties. Players like Kylian Mbappe, pronounced Mbappe, earn points for winning penalties, and there is no penalty for missing them. This makes them essential anchors for your captaincy. Here is the thing. The consensus strategy is currently pushing everyone toward the same outcome. Most analysts are advising managers to stack players from England and France in anticipation of them reaching the final. This creates a massive bottleneck. Everyone is making the same moves, which makes it incredibly hard to gain an edge. You have to decide if you are playing for safety or for the win. If you want to close a 15-point gap, you have to embrace the volatility of chasing clean sheets, even though defensive returns have been unreliable lately. The tension here is real. You are essentially balancing the need for a high-floor lineup against the necessity of rostering those elite, high-ceiling attackers. If you try to get too cute by picking undervalued players like Lamine Yamal, pronounced Lamien Yamahl, you might see your scores drop. The data shows that in a short tournament, one bad pick is almost impossible to fix. It is a shitty situation for anyone trying to differentiate their squad. If you look at the strategy, it is clear that success requires moving your focus away from individual fixtures. You are no longer playing for the next game. You are playing for the final. That means prioritizing players who are guaranteed to start in the final match, even if it means ignoring the third-place playoff entirely. It is a high-variance approach, and frankly, it is the only way to avoid the trap of identical rosters. Not for nothing, but this is why these tournaments are usually won by the people who stop trying to be clever. You have to secure your core of Kane, Mbappe, and Jude Bellingham, pronounced Bellingham. Then, you accept the rotation risks as the price of doing business. It is not about chasing the perfect individual performance anymore. It is about managing the systemic structure of the final two rounds. If you are still trying to optimize for individual matchups, you are already behind. You have to play the tournament, not the players. A few other things worth knowing. Generic semaglutide is hitting the market, and the volume is already exploding. Sales in India have seen a significant increase in recent months, which tells you everything you need to know about how much demand was being locked out by high prices. We are seeing a brutal squeeze on households right now. With fuel prices climbing and annual inflation sitting at 4.2%, most people are burning through their paychecks just to survive, leaving zero room for actual savings. Ponzi schemes are shifting their tactics to target people who are desperate rather than just greedy. These scammers are going after folks who need money for healthcare or retirement, and it is a shitty way to exploit people when they are at their most vulnerable. Your brain is basically a filter that ignores anything it doesn't expect to see. It relies on internal models to keep you moving efficiently, but that efficiency comes with major blind spots because it literally edits out reality to keep things predictable. Immigration enforcement has gotten a lot quieter lately. ICE has traded the loud, public raids for a more discreet model that keeps deportation numbers high, while avoiding the kind of headlines that used to give their leadership a headache. When someone comes to you with a problem, stop trying to fix it immediately. Most of the time, that fixer instinct is just you trying to get rid of your own discomfort instead of actually listening to the person in front of you. Finally, the market is reacting to reports that ships in the Strait of Hormuz might face a 20% cargo fee. Brent crude jumped 4% on the news, which is a reminder of how quickly a single shipping cost can turn into a geopolitical crisis. That is the state of things for this evening. Check back tomorrow for whatever happens next.